So welcome back to a previously exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. Bears are playing the Giants this week, and last year, Mike Donahue and I did a pretty long Remember This Crap about the Giants, and so I pulled out two big segments from that, and that's going to be this week's very special week between Christmas and New Year's edition of the podcast. I don't want to spoil too much of it. We get into the history of the two teams and how similar they are for good and bad. And then we talk about more recent games. We use Brad Muster's name in vain a couple of times. So that's going to be this week's edition. As always, you can subscribe to the podcast at disipio.com. You can sign up for the Pointless Exercise newsletter. At pointlessexercise.com, there is a sale that goes until January 3rd, so you might want to get on that. You can sign up for the Instagram account to follow it at instagram.com/pointlessexercise1, and somebody's going to win their choice of a t-shirt from the Pointless Exercise Disipio store, which you can also find at disipio.com. And I think that's about it. So with only this much ado, no further, here's Remember This Crap, Bears Giants.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So this week, Bears are playing the Giants, so I want to ask you, Mike, who's your favorite all-time New York Giants coach?
Oh, oh, wow.
There's a lot of good ones to pick from.
I mean, the one that jumps out, of course, because I'm a child of the 80s and the Bears were great, and of course, Parcells, but I didn't like him because the Giants were good. I didn't hate him, Parcells, like I did Bill Walsh, and I didn't really hate Joe Gibbs, but I resented how much he owned the Bears after the Bears went and surprised the hell out of him in the 84 divisional round in RFK. But Parcells, really, the Bears and Giants didn't really square off that much until did because Bears were over the hill in the playoffs in 91. So Jim Fassel jumps out because he took them to a Super Bowl, the only one that they've lost, I believe. And I can't readily recall some funny anecdotes about him, but in spite of him taking the Giants to the Super Bowl, I think there was plenty to enjoy. I'm going to have to go. I hate to do it just because it stands out, and I hate this guy. So I don't know if can it be my favorite? But the one that kind of jumps out is just the sort of like picture a character on Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, like the claymation, and the nose itself is like bright red and about to fall off from frostbite, and it brings me back to Tom Coughlin.
Yep.
I know he won two Super Bowls, but there's something of, in spite of that, he was kind of a comical red ass. And because he kind of looked like a cartoon character in that playoff game, takes me back. I'm probably missing somebody because you sprung that one on me. I probably couldn't even go through all the Giants coaches, but that's the inventory, and I'll just go with Coughlin.
So Coughlin's a good choice. What I remember most about him, I think it's exactly what you were describing. It was that NFC Championship game in Green Bay where it was brutally cold, and he kept slathering. He didn't wear a mask because he's a man. Kept slathering Vaseline all over his face, and the Vaseline was like freezing to his face. And the Packers won, the Giants won on a last second field goal. Mm-hmm. That's the reason I actually could tolerate Coughlin, because he cost the Packers a trip to the Super Bowl. So I like that. And he had that typical. He's the epitome of the football coach who thinks he's a military person.
For sure.
With the whole, if you weren't 5 minutes early to a meeting, you were late. It's like, no, that's bullshit. If you set a meeting for noon, people should get there at noon, not 11:55. If you want to start at 11:55, make the meeting at 11:55. But my favorite Giant coach is Ray Handley.
Oh, God. a blip on the radar. The successor to Bill Parcells, who after his second Super Bowl in 90, basically Parcells retired. Belichick takes the job in Cleveland, and so the Giants then put that, it wasn't really a dynasty, but they gave the keys to offensive mastermind Ray.
Well, they'd won two Super Bowls in 4 years. So
five.
Yeah, I guess 86 five, right.
To 90. Okay.
Because 90, that right. Well,
it was the 90 season.
87, 88, 89. Yes. I hate calendars, confuse me.
So illogical.
So 2 and 5 years. But that was, as we know, because we lived it, that was when the NFC was brutal. You had some of the best teams in football history were all playing at the same time. The Bears, who do get a lot of shit for only winning once, but that was an awesome team that just could never find a quarterback to prop up.
Right.
Then obviously you had the Bill Walsh 49ers, the Joe Gibbs Redskins, and the Parcells Giants all beating the crap out of each other, while the Broncos would skip into the Super Bowl.
And later, later on the Bills.
Look at our dynasty. Your dynasty sucks. Your dynasty wouldn't get out of the divisional round in the NFC. That's why you were getting beat 55 to 10.
Every season, beginning in 84 and ending, of course, when the Packers blew it in the 97 season. So was that 13 years in a freaking row that the NFC, and not only did they beat the AFC, with the exception of that second Giants victory in 1990, a 1-point win on Scott Norwood's miss. And then 2 years earlier when Montana won his third over Cincinnati as a 4-point game. All of those were about 17-point, anywhere from 17 to 30-point.
And that created the annoying phenomenon of the, I watched the Super Bowl for the commercials.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you watch Super Bowl for the commercials because the games are never any good. Well, now nobody talks about that anymore because for the most part we have competitive.
They've been good. It used to be a thing in the 80s where the NCAA men's championship game was like off the hook for year after year. You know, Villanova in 85 over Georgetown. In 87, Keith Smart with the late jumper for Indiana over Syracuse. Danny Manning, you know, wins one at the wire over Oklahoma in 88. 89, it goes into overtime. Like for years, the men's title game in hoops was beyond expectations. And during those years, the Super Bowl was the complete opposite. It was, yeah. I mean, we didn't complain in 85, but I mean, that was a joke.
If you think about it, if football had simply seeded its playoffs, regardless of conference, because the AFC and the NFC are pretend, you know, things anyway, think about how awesome some of those Super Bowls could have been. I mean, you could have had, you know, well, you know, Darryl Green could have run back a punt against the Bears in the Super Bowl and really scarred us for life. But you had all those great teams, and they would just knock each other off playing in, you know, sub-zero temperatures some places. And then you'd end up with them, you know, getting an inferior AFC team.
But, yeah.
Anyway, so I was looking at this list of Giants coaches. They have two Hall of Fame head coaches in their history. And the problem, I don't know if Coughlin, I don't know if 102 and 90 and two Super Bowls get you in, but at least they have two.
Two Super Bowls is a good argument.
I couldn't have told you who the other one was if you held a gun to my head.
So, okay. Here's what I know about Giants coaches. Here's what I know about Giants history is that they from, and I don't think I brought this up last week when I was crapping on the Lions, but you know, they're a charter member, NFL franchise, played in the first official NFL title game at Wrigley Field against the Bears. They lost. They beat the Bears the next year in the Polo Grounds on wearing basketball shoes. And then they proceeded to lose the next two in a row to Detroit, believe it or not, in Green Bay. And then from that point on, they won one championship in, I want to say, 10 appearances. They were like the Brooklyn Dodgers of the NFL. Like they would, I mean, it almost sounds like what you were just describing in the 80s, where, you know, you had, you know, the Bears and the Packers and the Rams, actually, later on the Browns that came out of that division. And it was always the Giants, and the Giants were always losing. So whoever that coach was, and I'm going to say because they made appearances, you know, in 38, 39, 41, 46, lost them all. Whoever that coach was might get it just if it was one guy.
Yes. So it was a guy who coached for 22 years for them. He took them to the playoffs 10 times. And basically from 31 to 53, if you went to the playoffs, you were in the championship game.
Usually, yeah. Almost always, yes.
And it's weird because some years there was a divisional game, some years there wasn't.
Correct. The Bears and Packers, the only time the Bears ever played a divisional game was when they beat the Packers, I think, in 46. So
this guy was named Steve Owen.
That's right.
I'm sure I've heard the name. It had never registered. So he was 151, 107, with 17 ties. And he went 2-8 in the playoffs. And
there you go.
Both wins were their championships in 34 and 38.
34 and 38, yeah.
He would have played the Bears in four title games.
Okay, yeah, 33, 34, 41, 46.
Wait a minute, maybe not. What? I love it when I do my own math.
Well, he would have beat him. So he was there from the beginning. So he would have beaten him in 34, but lost in 33, 41, and 46. 1-3.
Yes. He went 1-3. The Bears and Giants have played in the playoffs 8 times.
Okay.
The Bears are
4-4.
They're 4-4.
Yeah. Only one and one against each other in the Super Bowl era.
Yes. And they are two memorable games. One much more enjoyable.
I don't think that second one was memorable, other than it was Dan Hampton's last NFL game.
Well, it was memorable for this. The Bears were down 10-0 in the second quarter. They get the ball to the 6, and Mike Tomczak is playing quarterback. This is the year
Harbaugh got injured.
Right. This is the Jeff. So it was backup quarterbacks in the playoffs. It was Tomczak against Jeff Hostetler.
Uh-huh.
And so the Bears are down 10-0, getting their brains beaten in, but it's one of those things where, all right, if you punch this in, it's 10-7, mm-hmm. Maybe you've got a game. Madden even says, when it gets to third down, this is the biggest play of the game, because if the Bears score a touchdown here, we've got a game. If not, this could get out of hand.
Good call.
Bear fans will remember that it did get out of hand. First down, they run Neil Anderson for 2 yards.
Okay.
Second. Neil did not have. Neil ran rushed 12 times for 19 yards in the game. second down, they run. This is how wonderful the Bear offense was at the time. They run a play where their two primary receivers are their running backs. Neil's running kind of a little fade, and then Brad Muster is running a delayed route out of the backfield. Brad is wide open. He can walk in for the touchdown. Tomczak holds on to the ball too long, has to throw it over Pepper Johnson. It's still a super easy pass because no one is near Muster. Tomczak misses Muster by 10 yards.
Jesus.
Third down, Muster gets it to the half-yard line. And Mike Ditka, in very decisive fashion,
I remember this now.
Doesn't know what to do. He's standing on the sidelines. The kicking team is half on the field. The offense is half on the field. And finally, his red ass kicks in, and he's like, we're going for it. They go for it. They give it to Muster again, a fullback who was only a fullback in that he lined up in the fullback spot.
He was an offensive fullback.
Yes. He was. That was back when he succeeded Tommy Vardell at Stanford, and they were the exact same guy. And the Bears got Muster.
Good pull.
So they give it to Brad, and he loses 2 yards. The Giants go nuts. The Bears basically pack their shit up and go home. They get beat 31-3.
I don't even remember that. You know, so you must have been a senior in high school, because I remember being a freshman at Northern watching it in my dorm room, and I think I just remember the final score. It was ugly. You know, you got to accustomed. After the Super Bowl, you really started to get accustomed. You may be seeing this a little bit with the Cubs, even though I hate that comparison, where, all right, the Bears are on top of the world in 85. 86, they have a good season. You kind of felt like the Giants year, but still, the Bears didn't even get to that point. They're 14-2. They lose at home to the Redskins. Next year, have a good season, finally have a healthy McMahon. They're at home against the Redskins. They lose again. In 88, they had the benefit of coaching against Buddy Ryan in the Fog Bowl, so they advance, but then they get thumped at home. And what happened was you'd get used to them every year. They would start off 5-1, 4-2 every season, and they would always limp into the playoffs, like 1-3, 2-4. Ditka's like throwing gum at people and bickering with the press and the players. And so even by 1990, you know, it was the area was still bear crazy because they were going to the playoffs every year, 89 being an exception. But in 90, they had, once again, they get gift wrapped with, a Saints game at home, and they win that like they should. And then they weren't even competitive. The next year they lose at home to the Cowboys. So it was just became increasingly depressing. The Bears in the playoffs, you just didn't really have the expectation. It just sort of faded away after 85. But in 85 was the other time that they played the Giants, and it was quite a different outcome.
Yes, that the game that is ironically, despite the fact it was a completely dominant. Well, it's remembered for two things: Bears won in a shutout. Mm-hmm. Sean Landetta whiffed on a punt.
Correct.
No one will ever forget Sean Landetta kicking the ball from the 1 yard line, or maybe he was even in the end zone, just completely missing it.
No, he was in the end zone.
Bounce, taking a nice little hop for Sean Gale to go in for a touchdown.
Yep. 13-year-old Huey was privileged enough to actually be in attendance at that game. And it happened in our end zone, but of course we didn't know what the hell happened really for a while. You probably had some of those guys with the radios on their head could relate eventually. It was a really cold day. It was a lot colder than it was for the Rams game. And I do recall that Dennis McKinnon did catch two touchdowns, but there's not, that's what it stands out for is Landetta. And I don't know if he was as afraid of that defense as the Joe Theismans and the Dieter Brocks and everybody who lined up under center. I don't know why he would be. It's a special teams.
Yeah.
And it could have been the wind, you know.
He claimed that the wind moved the ball, and that's why he missed it. And maybe it did, but that was one of nine punts on the day for Sean Landetta. He was very busy. The Bears could have left at halftime and still shut out the Giants, I think. The Giants were completely overmatched. Phil Sims, in the game, threw for 209 yards. It doesn't sound horrible. He was 14 for 35. He got sacked six times for 60 yards, so they had net 149 yards passing. In a game where they couldn't run the ball, they gained less than half the yards the Bears did. The Bears gained 363 yards. That thing was never a contest.
Who even was their halfback there? Was it Joe Morris? Was he their guy?
Yeah, it was Joe Morris.
Because it was Otis Anderson when they won it the second time.
Yep. Yeah, so I don't remember if this was this your take that somebody that I know, their take is that the Giants and Bears are basically the same franchise. This is
okay.
Not one of yours. But the idea that they're, the Giants, I think, are 5 years younger than the Bears. So they're still old.
Okay.
They're owned by a family.
That was the founding family, correct?
Yes. And for all of their storied greatness, there's really long stretches where they're just no damn good.
Yeah.
And the Bears have 9 championships in their history. The Giants have 8. The Bears, they're both under 500 in the playoffs. The Giants are 24 and 25. The Bears are 17 and 19. The biggest difference in the two is when they won their titles. The Bears won 6 championships pre-66. The Giants only won 3.
Right.
And so then the Bears have only added on
one.
Wait a minute. It can't be 6-4. They would have had to have won 8. They tacked on 1 since.
33, 40, 42, 43, 46, 56, 63, 85. So 8.
Wow. This Pro Football Reference says 9, which gives them one more. So
you know why? They're probably giving us the 1932 title game played indoors against the future Detroit Lions, known at the time as the Portsmouth Spartans, even though the game was played on an 80-yard field. And Bronco Nagurski supposedly scored a touchdown, rammed his big Viking head into the wall, and claimed that the last guy that hit him really did a number on him.
All right, I'm taking it.
That was
going for 9.
And it was that game. See, up until 1932, they didn't think, you know, they needed a championship game. It was based on record. And it was kind of silly because they didn't even count ties. They just threw ties out. So instead of being a half a win and a half a loss, it didn't matter. And I think the Portsmouth team in 32 is the third best team in the league. The Bears were the second. The Packers had the first, as far as if you were to do the wins, losses, and ties instead of just wins and losses. So it's not that bad because the Packers got screwed out of. But there was a tie, and so it was like an impromptu championship game. And then the league finally, in their infinite wisdom, finally, oh, wow, this is pretty exciting and maybe a moneymaker. And so beginning in 33, then. So I'm guessing that Pro Football Reference counts the 32 game, and I will too. So
right,
yeah,
there's nine. They have an asterisk next to the championship number.
And it says fucking Chicago Stadium.
Championships include Super Bowls, 1966 present, and NFL and AFL championships pre-Super Bowl era before 1966. So you're right. So they won two of their titles before there were championship games. So they're 6-4 in the title in the pre-Super Bowl title game, then 1-1. So they're 7-5 in championship games. Okay. And so they've obviously won two of those games back when it was basically pre-playoff college football, which is somebody just gave you a trophy. And you're like, ha-ha, we're the champs. And since Hallis, you know,
right,
the team, he probably just – he was too cheap to – he would have borrowed a trophy from somebody. He's too cheap to buy one.
Sure.
And they held it up. Somebody took a picture, and they were the champs.
You're right. They Wikipedia or Sports or Pro Football Reference is giving them credit for championships won in the pre-championship – in the pre-1932 era. Is that what you're saying?
As damn well they should.
Well, but then the Packers have a few more, too. So,
well, that's no good.
I think. I'm not looking at it, but I'm pretty sure the Packers won a couple pre-championship game titles, which I don't think that should be counted. Because, like I said, they didn't even count ties. You're given – team can go, like, 3-2-4, and they take the title over. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, there were a lot of ties.
Yeah.
Giants have 33 ties in their history. The Bears have 42.
And I'm sure like 80% of those were before 1940. And a lot of scores in the 20s and 30s, it's funny if you look through it. Because I used to do this every year as a kid. We'd get like the media guy, and my dad was a season ticket holder. And I would just like comb through each season, just like seeing 6-0, 3-3.
Another way that the franchises are kind of sad is, I mean, you know who the Bears' all-time leading receiver is?
Let me guess. Is it Brandon Marshall?
No.
It's Johnny Morris.
It's Johnny Morris. Okay, so that's embarrassing.
Marshall would have caught him if he wasn't such a goof.
Right, Well, he barely – I mean, Marshall almost caught him. Barely played for the Bears, like 3.5 years, right?
I think two and a half. I don't think he made it into a fourth year.
The fact that Johnny Morris, the all-time leading receiver, 5,000 yards.
Right, which really doesn't get the credit it deserves, I think, even amongst sports fans. For years, we laughed about the fact that the passing records were held, you know, just not even a full, just maybe one generation before Morris, which, you know, laughable, but it almost seems underrated that, you know, their all-time leading receiver is Johnny Morris.
So I'm sure Giants fans probably have the same cringe. Do you know who the all-time? There's no way you're going to guess this. If you guess this, I will be super impressed. If you know who the all-time Giants receiving leader is.
Is it Frank Gifford?
He is not. But I want to talk.
He was a running back. He was a running back anyway. He wasn't a wideout. It would have to be. I guess is it from the same era as Luckman or Morris? Like, there's a whole lot of difference.
No, it's far more modern.
Oh, okay.
But you could have given me 15 guesses, and I wouldn't have guessed this guy.
Is it Stephen Baker, touchdown maker?
It is not.
Is it Mark Ingram or
no? Nope. I probably would have guessed. If you just said, "All right, it's relatively recent," I would have said, "It's David Tyree." You know, just pinning a ball against someone.
Right.
It's
Mark Bavaro. No.
It's Amani Toomer.
Oh, Amani Toomer. Of course, the inspiration for Arnold Schwarzenegger.
To give Amani credit, he has almost twice as many yards as Johnny Morris.
Wow.
9,000 yards, Amani Toomer. I would never have guessed that.
The inspiration for Arnold Schwarzenegger impressions everywhere between 1999 and 2008 at fantasy football drafts.
Amani Toomer.
Yep. Wow. We could have gotten that. I mean, we know him. It's not like he was a guy from the 30s.
I know. But I just, well, I actually, if you'd given me no time period, then there's no way I would have guessed him. I don't know who I would have started guessing. But yeah, to me, that was, it was just ridiculous. Their all-time leading rusher was a surprise to me, too.
Okay. But
this one makes a little more sense.
All-time leading rusher. See, now I'm pressing too hard. We already rattled off Joe Morris and Otis Anderson, and neither of those guys stuck around.
Well, when I give you the clue, it'll be way too easy. But
I can't think. If it's more modern, I have like less likely to get it right away.
He missed out on a Super Bowl championship because he retired to host the Today Show.
Oh, wait, Barber, Tiki Barber.
Tiki's their all-time leading rusher, 10,449.
So that's pretty funny, actually, because I don't think Toomer played on either of their Super Bowl winners in the Eli era, right? It's just funny that they have, like, in both of those guys, I want to say, Toomer and Tiki played after the two Super Bowls won by Parcells, but before the two Super Bowls won by Coughlin.
No, Amani was on the first one. He was on the
He was. Seven. Well, I guess, yeah, he hung around long enough. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, his last year was, I won't scroll up.
You know, I don't feel that much better about, you know, I'm picturing Forklift listening to this and like yelling at the computer going.
Yeah, well, he's the only Giants fan any of us know.
The fact is, it is in the modern era when the Giants have sort of pulled even with the Bears. So, yeah, it would have been a little more fun 30 years ago in our time, though.
So their all-time leading passer is Eli. And the Bears, it's one of his contemporaries.
Yes.
I mean, Jay had almost as much success as Eli. There were seasons. There might be more seasons where Cutler was better than Eli. And Eli has two Super Bowls. Although, admittedly, Eli, pretty goddamn great in those two Super Bowls.
He was.
I mean, so he earned the two he won because he was pretty damn good. Okay, so who's your all-time favorite New York Giant?
Okay, let me think about that. Again, I kind of hated the Giants, so I have to walk myself through this a little bit because I don't really have any guys that I liked. The person who I hated the absolute most in the 1980s was Phil fucking McConkie.
Yes. And what a stupid mustache.
Yeah. It's easier for me to think of Giants that I hated, even though, again, as
It's your most memorable Giant. It doesn't have to be your favorite. You shouldn't be able to pick a favorite on a team we don't like.
Right. Because, and even though the Giants were a little – the Bears didn't cross paths with them as much as they did the Niners and Redskins, so I didn't have that much antipathy. I did like Strahan, although it was kind of lame when Favre gave him the sack record. Yeah. I'm going to go with Dave Duerson. Wasn't he a Giant? All right, not memorable, but that's my – I was still answering the favorable, not most memorable.
Mine's a tie between Ali Haji Sheik.
Oh yeah,
and Willie Mays.
Oh hey, good call. Even though it's before your time, Ali Haji Sheik story, and I'm gonna have to sort of Google this at the same time. I want to say that Ali Haji Sheik, while he was playing for the Giants in the mid '80s, around the time that the Bears knocked him out. Got busted for scalping tickets to a Giants playoff game. So if I can find that, I will, make sure I get it out there. But it seemed pretty funny. I mean, it wasn't like ball players in the 80s. I know they make less than they do today, but it wasn't like they were, hurting. So he took his complimentary tickets and took them to market.
That reminds me of a very true, very funny Ken Reitz quote about the worst thing about being, I don't know if he was traded or cut by the Cubs. He said the worst thing about it was they made him keep his season tickets.
Who said that? Ken Reitz said that.
I love that. I'm sure it's a joke he repeated that he'd heard a million times, but I always liked it.
No, right. That's sort of a universal joke that you can kind of change it around. By the way, apparently Ali Haji Sheik has been successful at scrubbing the internet of his infraction. So I'm going to now consider this my white whale. And
has he scrubbed it as effectively as Rolf Benerschke has scrubbed it of footage of him hosting Wheel of Fortune?
Or I thought you were going to say changing his colostomy.
His colostomy bag, yes.
Or off Benerschke. I think I have to have a drink for that one. Hold on a sec.
Yeah, we can try to work in a Fouad Ravaez reference at some point, too.
Outstanding. Rolf Benerschke was a participant in, I believe, the winning kicker in the memorable AFC divisional playoff game in the 82 season, maybe 81. Dolphins Chargers. They went when Kellen Winslow kept like dying of exhaustion.
Yeah, they had to give him an IV to resuscitate him after the game.
Yeah,
and that's one of those games that when ESPN Classic was still a thing, maybe NFL Network shows it. That's one of the few like old timey games that if I would see, and it had nothing to do with Chicago sports, I would still watch because that game is amazing.
It is.
They had the hook and lateral play
the first
Dolphins
thing I think
ran
of.
That actually worked.
At the end of the first half.
And
yep.
Kellen Winslow had an amazing game, even to the point where, I don't know how many passes he caught, he blocked the field goal. Like, Rolf...
Kellen Winslow got a black field goal in that game.
And it was like a legitimately, like, jumped up in the air and knocked it out of the sky. Well, not like the kick was low. Like, he went up and... Right. Yes.
The kicker that he blocked obviously was not Benerschke since that was his teammate. It would have been Miami kicker Uwe von Schamp.
Yes, Uwe von Schamp.
You know, back when kickers had all kinds of exotic names.
But Rolf, I think you're right. I think Rolf Uwe made. I think Kellen blocked what would have been the game winning field goal.
Okay.
And then Rolf made the field goal to win it. But it was a playoff game. They were going to play all night.
Yep.
So.
Yep. I don't think it went to a second overtime, but it went late into the first one.
It was one of those. And then, so the most infamous part of that is, so the Dolphins play that ridiculous game, or the Chargers Dolphins play that ridiculous game. Chargers win. It's like 85 degrees, 100% humidity in Miami. The very next week, they have to go to Cincinnati.
Yep, yep.
And it's the coldest playoff game ever played.
Is that a fact?
Yes.
I remember watching
in fact, see, this is how good we are at this. It may have been topped by that Giants-Packer game.
Oh, that froze, poor old.
But those are two of the Cincinnati. The one in Cincinnati was brutal.
I remember watching that as a probably I just turned 11 years old because I'm born in January '72. I remember watching that game and like it stuck with me, just the reporting and just like the smoke coming out of people's mouths, how epically cold that
game. Yeah, I mean, I think the Chargers woke up, looked out the window of their hotel room.
I know.
There had to be a thermometer on a bank sign somewhere, and they had already lost.
And I always, we grew up as Cubs fans and after Ernie Banks, but we learned the legend of him and the sad case about how Ernie Banks was the greatest ball player to never have played in a World Series, which, it was a fact. And it was, there are a lot of shitty teams through the years, and some of them would have great players, but like they would all eventually make it. I always kind of equated Dan Fouts to like the Ernie Banks of that era. But what's funny, we had this conversation against Sunday because I heard a fact about Stafford. It turns out he's sixth, I think, of all quarterbacks. But the idea of like which quarterbacks have had the most yards and have never played in the Super Bowl. I don't even know if Fouts is the leader, but Stafford's getting up there. I don't think he's going to get there anytime soon. But
I mean, I loved the Chargers as a kid.
Chuck Muncy, man, how could you not love those specs?
I mean, because they had everything going for them. They had the awesome uniforms.
Yep.
Which the uniforms they have this year are basically back to those. Actually, now they're like the best possible mashup of the cool old white helmet ones with now they've gone powder blue permanently as their uniform, but they have those kind of weird gold pants that they wore during the Fouts years.
Yep.
They're just awesome. It's like the most perfect uniform. I know they have no fans, although nobody has any fans this year, so that'll fit right in.
Right. Doesn't matter.
So you had the cool uniforms. You had, for the time, the most ridiculous offense anybody had ever seen, Eric Coryell. They were just throwing it all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I also thought Dan Fouts was cool. He was this burly, burly guy with the big beard just chucking it all over the place. And they were always, it seemed like, the 3 o'clock kickoff. The Bears were always on at noon. That was the good old Johnny Morris, Tim Ryan years.
On CBS, yep.
Yeah. So then we'd get, and for whatever reason, as a kid, I always liked NBC better than CBS because I felt like the colors were better.
I liked like it because it was more exotic.
Like the game was brighter. Maybe it was just the stupid little peacock on the logo, but I was always, and so I remember I loved the Chargers, and for some reason I loved Dolphin linebacker A.J. Dewey, probably because he spelled his name weird. But so I loved those Charger teams, and I was very disappointed as a small child. Although I also thought that was the year that the Bengals had switched to the ridiculous striped helmets. And I remember thinking those were kind of cool, too. So maybe I didn't take the title game all that hard.
Right. Wait, they actually had – it was just Bengals before then? That was the year they switched?
I remember – it might not have been that year, but it was within a year or two.
Okay, okay.
The old Kenny Anderson. And they switched to the – they had the – they really had very basic, boring – they were the – well, by design, they were basically the Browns.
Yeah.
Except they had black instead of brown as the second color. And they just right. wore like black uniforms with orange numbers, and then they had the orange helmet with Bengals on it, and then they got really exotic.
Right.
And why wouldn't you get exotic when you've got a quarterback as flashy as Augustana's very own, Ken Anderson?
Absolutely, my friend.
They went to the tiger stripes on the like on the shoulder thing, yeah. and then the helmets, and I was like, ooh, yeah, that's cool, because I was, you know, what, 8? I think that was the most awesome thing ever. In fact, I'm positive that I had a Ken Anderson jersey.
Okay. I mean, he was popular. I mean, you know, the funny thing is, you look at it now, he was like in his 30s when the Bengals made it to the Super Bowl. He was getting towards the end of his career.
Yeah, and he was completely unathletic looking. He had the bad mustache.
He looked like your friend's dad, yeah.
And then he had the bad, you know, like he had the face mask that you got when you bought like the cheap helmet. He had the same one. It was like it was basically the 2-bar version of the Joe Theismann 1-bar.
Right. Right.
The sad little, you know. And other guys were starting to figure out that, you know, other styles of face masks look cool, and that one didn't. Ken didn't care. He's like, I don't know, give me my old helmet. I'm going out there and I'm going to throw 18 times and see what happens.
Yep. You know what? You're right, though. Those Bengals teams beginning in 78 to 81, 9-7, 12-4, 11-5, 10-6. But more than that, like you say, like they had, you know, Fouts was flinging it. Muncy was in the backfield. Winslow was the premier tight end in football. And then they had John Jefferson was an elite receiver. And then they had Charlie Joyner, who was like an aging veteran, but he was still very useful. And Jefferson left and signed a big fat contract with the Packers. And this is like that period of time that we entered the world and we always assumed the Packers always sucked because they did then. And Jefferson was a bust because they thought, oh, John Jefferson and James Lofton. It's like, oh, well, wait, you're going to have Lynn Dickey throw to him? And then the Chargers just replaced Jefferson with Wes Chandler. Like, they always had like an arsenal. And I have a memory of them playing the Bears when the Bears weren't that good, and it was kind of exciting, and the Bears beat them. It was kind of stunning. And it kind of brings me back to what you're saying about like CBS and NBC. For me, I like the NBC games because they were more exotic. What it meant was that the Bears were at home against an AFC team, which was strange. Like all the Bears games would have been on CBS. Yeah. And then if they went to an AFC city, it was still on CBS, which was struck me as weird because the AFC was the NBC was the AFC network. But if the Bears hosted against the AFC, then the game would be on Channel 5. So you have like Don Kroenke all of a sudden showing up on your TV and Dan Fouts. And it was like exciting. Like they're in Soldier Field and this shitty Bears team with John Rivetto at place kicker, I think, beat them over the top.
God, John Rivetto, the worst.
He was the kicker after and before Bob Thomas. It's one of those cases where the Bears realized they made a mistake in cutting Thomas too soon and brought him back.
So you mentioned John Jefferson, and he only played 3 years for the Chargers.
Is that right?
He gained 1,000 yards all 3 seasons. His last year with them, he caught 82 passes, which in 1980 was like catching 160.
It's insane. Nobody caught 100 catches in a season then, I'm pretty sure.
He caught 82 passes, which didn't lead the league. I don't know who did, but he led the league in yards with 1,340, and he scored 13 touchdowns for the second time. He scored in 3 years with the Chargers. He scored 36 touchdowns.
Jesus Christ.
And so he rightly wanted to get paid.
Yep.
And
this is before free agency, though. So what happened? Did they force a trade?
Yes. They traded him to the worst possible place you could trade a good black football player in 1981.
Exciting. Right.
They traded him to the Packers.
Right. And the Packers were not good. They did have Lofton, but like, what do they think? Like, without any kind of an O-line and, you know, Lynn Dickey, like I said, was the quarterback, and he was probably, he'd been around 10 years.
So he never gained more than 830 yards for the Packers. He caught 39, 27, 57, and 26 passes in his 4 years there. He only scored 11 touchdowns for the Packers. They basically ruined his career. So
I actually like that, though. On the flip side, that he was absolutely worthless for that team.
Yeah, it was great for a Bear fan. I'm sure the Packer fans were all excited. Look, we got this awesome wide receiver. This is going to be great.
Right.
And he's like, wait a minute. This is my quarterback, Lynn Dickey?
Right.
This shit isn't going to work. And he was right.
It's funny, now you talk about that era, and I would like to bring some of the listeners that aren't from this specific window in time, because the Packers really were of no consequence. The Bears weren't either until 84, but like, it's hard to think of that now, right? Because for the last 30 years, they've just basically kept, you know, hanging the Bears from the flagpole, and you know the history with Lombardi prior to that, but from like 1970 to 1990, like two solid decades, they were a joke. So yeah, I mean, they get Jefferson. I don't remember the Bears being really scared. Of course, that was only in 81, so the Bears had their own problems. But it's funny when you think about it that, you know, the Bears would sweep them in 85, 86, 87. And it was like, well, that's how it should always be. Yeah, it might sound strange to people.
We go back to that.
Right. But that was it. That was like the only window. And it really has not been like that for any sustained period whatsoever. So I imagine that might strike some younger people as odd that there was a time when we didn't even think about the Packers. They were so bad.
So to kind of punctuate your point, Lynn Dickey played for the Packers from 1976 to 1985.
Wow, whole decade.
How many winning records do you think the Packers had during that decade?
They somehow made the playoffs in 82, but that was a 9-game strike-shortened season, and there were several under 500 teams. The Bears actually blew a lead against Tampa Bay in the last game of the season to finish 3-6, but had the Bears actually won that game, they would have been 4-5. They would have made the playoffs. So I'm going to say I can't even point to that season because I'm going to guess the Packers made the cheap-ass playoffs. I shouldn't actually denigrate that since the Cubs are going to be in maybe a weird, cheap playoff. But anyway, so I'm not even going to say 82 that they did it, and I'm going to say zero.
Only one, just 82, 5-3-1.
They went 5-3-1. Yep. I gave them more credit. All right.
But then Dickey had his best year the next year. They went 8-8. He threw for, at the time, 1983, he threw for 4,400 yards.
I make fun of Dickey just because it was a weird-looking quarterback, you know, with a white afro, but he, I do remember him having a couple like insane seasons late in his career.
Well,
4,000 yards.
He led the league in yards passing, touchdowns, and interceptions. He missed the Jameis by one. 32 touchdowns, 29 interceptions.
So you, Kyle and I, were talking about Winston last week, but we stopped doing the podcast once the Bears were eliminated. Winston did indeed become the – was it? Did we determine if he would have been the first, or did we unearth other cases of 30-30 quarterbacks? I can't remember now, and I'm sad.
I feel like he was – I think he's the first. I think
there might be some AFL guys that did it.
I think Dickey, Peyton –
Oh, so Dickey did do it.
Dickey didn't do it, but I think the examples were Dickey only missed it by one.
Okay.
And it was that year. Let's see if Peyton did it. If Peyton didn't do it, I don't think anybody had done it before Jameis. The amazing thing about Jameis was not only did he before I get to that. Peyton, 26 touchdowns, 28 interceptions.
Okay.
That was his rookie year. That's the closest he came. And then Eli, I think, came really close, too.
Wow.
But Jameis, with his 30-30 season last year, also lost 12 fumbles.
Wow.
He turned the ball over 42 times.
2.5 times a game, almost.
I think Jameis is the first 30-30. I think he's the first player to ever throw 30 interceptions. Because Eli threw 27. Never 30, got to 30.
Regardless of number of touchdowns, you mean? Nobody's ever thrown 30.
I I think. Well, let's, you know, I got a freaking Google machine here. I suppose I could look it up.
I'm now curious, and like, if there, I would think, my first thought is how many Bears are on it, but they're like, no, because the Bears never really throw the ball to begin with.
Well, yeah, the Bears would just bench. Well, the Bears would bench that quarterback and start four other guys. They would. I mean, they would mix in. They'd throw enough interceptions, but no one guy would be allowed.
Correct. I'm guessing Cutler's probably certainly in the team photo franchise interception. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, obviously, right? It's like Babe Ruth has the most strikeouts, or I don't even know if that's true.
Oh, here we go. This will bring it back. Oh no, no. Well, I guess if you count the AFL. One guy put the interception record out of range. No one will ever.
Was it Frank Trapuka?
No, we're bringing it back to last week.
Jared Blanda?
He threw 42 interceptions.
Wow.
In 1962. So the guys who threw 30, Vinny Testaverde threw 35. So he's like your okay. NFL leader.
Modern day. Okay. And
so I don't know that he threw 30 touchdown passes.
No, I don't think so. Would have been in 1998.
Now this is a good season. He threw 13 touchdowns and 35 interceptions.
I'm just going to guess that the year is either 1986, 87, or 88.
88. He won five games.
Is that okay?
A lot of AFL on this list. Frank Trapuka, we mentioned.
He is on there. Kelly.
John Hadle.
Then
we get back to the Vikings. Fran Tarkenton threw 38 in 1978. Okay. Pour one out for the greatest quarterback in Bears history. Sid Luckman threw 31 in 1947.
Wow. In 1940, you knew he was at the end of the rope. Oh. I'm just picturing an aging God, Luckman back then.
Blanda is on the list again.
For the Bears?
Nope, Houston again. So okay, 3 years later. 37.
Yeah, he didn't really quarterback the Bears.
Al Doro for the New York Titans in 61. Oh, here's a good one. This is a former Bear radio analyst.
Jim Hart?
Jim Hart threw 30 for the St. Louis Cardinals.
I don't know if John Dooley listens to this, but I'll have to give a shout-out for Jim Hart being an SIU quarterback. So there.
Kenny Stabler and threw 30 in 1978. Oh, another one of the great AFC on NBC quarterbacks, Richard Todd, 30 for the Jets in 1980, and then Jameis.
Okay.
And then the guys with 29 are both Packers.
You already said Dickey.
Lynn Dickey.
Who nearly became the first NFLer, non-AFLer to do it before Winston, right?
And then we had another guy just running around.
It's got to be Favre.
Just having fun.
Right, but how did he do it in his regular season games is the question.
Yeah. Well, he was warming up for the playoffs that year. That was...
The third time we're going to circle back to Tom Coughlin's nose in that playoff game, that actually was did Favre have any kind of a mistake that I think he did, right? Didn't I mean, it's fun to like make it a meme that Favre always had an awful moment in games that mattered. I think he had one in that game too, the Giants title game in 07.
All I remember about that game was he clearly did not want to be there. It was too cold. I remember watching the game. And it was the way I watch Packers playoff games to this day is I just kind of monitor it because they make me – I hate them. They're not as bad as the baseball Cardinals, who I literally will not – the only postseason Cardinal games I've watched probably since 85 of the Cardinals were the four that the Cubs played against them. I just don't. It's like, fuck them. I don't like them. Screw them. So I've missed on some great moments. I always find out like right away, like Travis Ishikawa hits the home run to win the pennant off Michael Walker. So I watch the replay 1,000 times, but I don't live it in real life. It's kind of the way I'm with the with those Packers. And I remember in 07, keeping tabs on the game, and it was close late. You know, everybody thought the Packers.
It was. It came down to the winning kick, and the game was played in the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field.
And so I started watching late, and you could just Favre just looked so cold, and like he's like, I'm old, I don't want to do this shit anymore. And that was his last game as a Packer.
As a Packer, right. Showed up with the Jets, took a few dick pics, sent him off, and then ended up in Minnesota.
And he'd had a great season. He threw for 4,000 yards, 28 touchdowns.
Well, and he had a phenomenal season in Minnesota then, too, right? Up until...
Yes, he went to the Jets, and he was not good.
He was not. He wasn't bad, but he yeah.
Then he went to the Vikings and was very good that year until he threw the ill-advised
right
interception that cost them a trip to the Super Bowl when he could have easily run for the first down. And he's like, "Nope, I'm old. I don't run anymore. I'm just going to throw." I think it's picked off.
And I think they were already sort of in field goal range anyway, too.
It was very questionable. He would have been better off just throwing it into the turf, but he tried to make a play and it got picked off. And then he came back in 2010, and Corey Wooten ended his career.
Right, which was like the one small, and we can maybe finish on this, but it's like the one small consolation I have to that guy just completely owning the Bears. You know, he took over midway through the 92 season, and we just talked about that era that we grew up in where the Packers were of no consequence. The Bears almost always beat him twice a year. You come to Favre in 92, he's the starter. And then in 93, the Bears split, and then 94, 95, 96, 97, 98, Packers sweep. They split 99, 2000, and then again, 2001, 2002. And so the Bears did sort of exact a little bit of revenge in 2005 when they had that good first year with a second year under Lovie when they made the playoffs before losing. They finally took about 10 years of frustration, at least for the fans, out on Favre in a game that year, but that was just one time. But it was, to me, always very satisfying that the last play of his career was absolutely getting flattened on the turf of the college football stadium, because that was the year in 2010 that the Hump Dome
collapsed,
caved in.
Yeah, so they had to play with I just remember the game that was the game that Hester set the all-time record for punt returns, touchdowns.
Could be.
Is that right? Because I remember he did it on that icy field. It didn't look any fun for anybody. It looked cold. It was icy.
Well, it's fun for the Bears because we were charging towards the playoffs at least and still playing well. And who was the quarterback? Joe Webb or whatever was the little guy? Wasn't that the quarterback in that game for Minnesota? Not Joe Webb. That's the cop from Dragnet. Webb, right? Spud Webb? Somebody help me out here.
I think it is Joe Webb.
Yeah. He was the quarterback. Wait. I must be confusing. He must have come in relief of Favre because Favre got...
Yeah, Favre quit.
His career ended in the first quarter.
That Corey Wooten sack, he's like, I'm done. I've had enough of this shit. He probably went home. He probably started driving to Mississippi before the game ended.
Back when the DeCipio message board was a living, thriving organism, somebody had posted a pretty hilarious photo of like a chalk body outline of Favre after that play. I'll never forget.
Where did that go? I lost the... I was going to look up the box score. Screw it. Let's just say it was Joe Webb.
That was it, though. I'm actually on Favre's page itself. Sure, his last season was 2010. But it shows him. It shows a box score, but that's for the Lions of the Eagle. He did not play anymore. So, yeah, I know he never played again. So that's the consolation I get for basically 15 years. Man.
Well, 15 years. I'm sure we've got two Packer games where we'll get into this, but just the most, distinctly remember when he finally, he kept threatening to retire, which is why they drafted Aaron Rodgers. He kept threatening he wouldn't do it, or he would, and then he would decide, screw it, I'm coming to training camp. He would unretire. When he finally retired, I'm like, thank God we are done with this guy. It's been a miserable, and then they replaced him with a guy who was better.
I know, he was better.
You've got to be fucking kidding.
It's like...
So for, 25 years now?
I know.
You've been living with this.
He was better. Like, all of the sort of...
he was all of the...
Texas with fewer of the back-breaking interceptions. I can't recall. Rodgers was like the anti-Favre. In fact, I remember, and again, it's a moment that I appreciate. I was in attendance when the Bears under Nagy went to the playoffs, and Rodgers had that interception streak of going, I don't know how much of a record-setting streak it was. I mean, he didn't throw pick. He was... efficient and careful. Bears broke that streak that when Rodgers had no choice on a fourth down but to throw one into the end zone. That's what it took. Favre would just be like, oh, we're in field goal range. I'm going to chuck it up.
Yeah, he was all of the Favre, or Rodgers was all of the big plays of Favre without all the crippling mistakes.
Yeah.
Because that was the one redeeming thing about Favre was that. Yes, he would make unbelievable plays, but then he would also do just the dumbest thing possible and give you a chance.
six interceptions against the Rams in a one. You know, I think we said the Giants game. I think he had something to do with that Eagles game, which everyone blames on the Green Bay defense for blowing a fourth and, you know, 26 or something like that. I want to say that even in overtime, he got picked in that game. Yeah, it's a whole, there's a whole litany. We can save all that material for when we play the Packers.
Okay, so the reason I couldn't find the box score right away for this Bear-Viking game was, in my mind, because it was Favre's last game, his last game of the season, it wasn't. It was the 13th right. game of the season. He just decided he was done. And it Correct. Was Joe Webb who came in. Favre barely played.
Yeah, because it was early in the game when he got knocked out.
He got
out.
Sacked for a 12-yard loss with Corey Wooten, and then he was gone. Devin ran back a punt, so I got that. I remembered that part right. He had two punt return. He had a 64-yard punt return and then a 3-yard punt return. And the Bears won 40-14. I believe they clinched the division championship in the game, which is why in my mind I'm sure I've always thought, well, that was the end of the season. No, they had two more games, but they were 10-4. Right.
Yep. That was good time, shortly. Like I said, the following year when Cutler got hurt, it all seemed to go to shit. What are you going to do?
I don't know. All right. Well, yeah, it's good. See, this is the perfect use of this podcast. We start with who's your favorite Giant coach, and we end up on Brett Favre.
And I will not forget Steve Owen now. I knew that somewhere, and now I'm deemed to never forget.
I'm not sure if you hooked my brain up to whatever, if I'd ever even heard that name. I would think I have. But
you must have. The only other thing is at the end of, because after him in the modern era, they had Ali Sherman.
Yeah, I was going to say, because of NFL films.
He was always interviewed by the Sable family for NFL films.
Because he was available and he was close.
I only know this because I told the story last year with you and Kyle, but like sometime about 18 years ago, and I do not, and this will not go off on another tangent because I want to leave it, but it was on the Mac Yurko and Harry show. And like 18 years ago, yeah, problematic, but they could say that for another time. The question was asked for a free WMVP AM1000 t-shirt. There are three coaches at this point in NFL history who have been to the playoffs at least three times and never won a playoff game. And I started dialing my phone, not knowing the answer, and it quickly came to me because Mike fucking Ditka beat two of those coaches, Jim Mora and Buddy Ryan. Yeah. And I won my t-shirt when I don't know if I hogged both of those answers. I did not know the third, but I learned it was Ali Sherman who lost three consecutive title games in 61, 62 to the Packers and 63 to the Bears. So I hope I brought it full circle by bringing it back to the Giants.
Right. In my mind, I can only go back as far as Ali Sherman. So I would have said, it's probably Ali Sherman.
Yeah,
he hosted the original NFL matchup. I think he hosted. There were just two guys. I don't remember who the other guy was. And they would go through that week's games, and he was, you know, the coach who would talk about what they were going to do, and I always remembered that.
Right. Me too, from the 80s. And then when I learned, like, that guy never even won a who is that guy to talk? I mean, you know, it might be a little harsh, but, yeah, three straight playoff appearances, never won a playoff game. So there's your Giants.
Many of us have herpes.